This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're talking about the covert role the U.S. played in the 1973 coup that overthrew Salvador Allende, the democratically elected socialist president of Chile, and installed the military dictator Augusto Pinochet. This Thursday marks the 30th anniversary of the coup. A little later, we'll hear more from Peter Kornbluh. His new book, The Pinochet File, collects and analyzes many of the recently declassified documents that reveal the U.S. support of the coup. Jack Devine worked on the CIA's Chile task force at the time of Allende's election. At the time of the coup, Devine was a CIA agent stationed in Chile. He later rose to the positions of chief of the Latin American division and acting director of the CIA's operations abroad. He's now retired from the CIA and runs a crisis management consulting firm in New York City. He says so that to understand the U.S. policy toward Chile, you have to put it in the context of the 70s.
It's very hard when we look back at historical things to look at them strictly in the context of the documents. I don't take exception to Peter's comments, but we were at a very different point in our history, and it's hard thinking back about the Cold War today. It seems so, so far away. But it wasn't just Nixon and Kissinger. It was very much the world we lived in at that time. We looked at Latin America, wars of liberation, communist takeover. And again, it sounds stale today. But in that period, it was viewed as a real threat. And I think it was in that context that the Nixon concern, if you will, should be understood. The second thing, which I think is terribly important in terms of the agency's role, this was not a covert action program put forth by CIA. In fact, it's an important point in virtually every covert action operation that I'm familiar with, and that is it's a presidential initiative. And in this case, the agency was quite lukewarm about becoming involved in a coup attempt against Allende in the period following the election.
Why was it lukewarm?
There's two points. One, they didn't think it would be successful. And the second was actually a time factor as well. In order to be successful, much more time would have been needed. But the ingredients were not there, and was proven to be quite accurate, as a matter of fact. The ingredients weren't there for a successful coup when Allende was elected. The covert action program was much more limited. Even during the election, it was a denigration campaign, which means criticizing the candidate. It wasn't really getting out there organizing the parties in a more proactive way. The Schneider incident, which Peter refers to.
This is the general who was assassinated.
General Schneider was the commander-in-chief of the armed forces at that time. Was assassinated or killed, if you will, in a failed kidnapping attempt. But I want to make very clear that that was not a CIA operation. And it had a tremendous impact, both with inside the CIA, but more importantly inside the U.S. government, in the entire political dynamic in Chile. It really put the end to coup plotting. It just stopped cold. The military itself had no heart for it. In fact, that's one of the points that I think gets lost in this commentary about the military. Up until September of 73, the military really was not in a coup-plotting frame of mind. They really, in the post-Schneider period, were not engaged in coup-plotting. What drove them to coup-plotting in September to the coup in September of 73 was the fact that their military institutions started to fall apart, and they felt they needed to protect that more than anything else, which was consistent with their mindset, but not necessarily mine.
Just getting back to the assassination of General Schneider, I believe what Peter Kornbluh says in the Pinochet file is that the documents show that the United States supplied arms that were used in that assassination and also money that was used in the planning of it.
I don't believe either of those statements to be true, that the arms were provided. I believe that is not accurate. And money provided for that kidnapping, I do not believe that's accurate either.
Are there things, you know, all these documents now have been declassified. You worked with the CIA in Chile at the time of the coup, but I'm wondering if you've learned a lot from reading these documents. I assume that you've read them. You should let us know if you have or not. But if you have read them, what are some of the things you didn't know were happening even though you were part of the operation?
I don't think it's so much, I mean, first of all, no one can know everything. And the documents aren't the whole story by any means. And one of the problems in looking at the documents, it doesn't point out what's taking place on the other side. I mean, what was going on outside of CIA? What was going on inside the Communist Party and the Russians and the Cubans? And what was going on inside the UP government at that time? All of that, of course, is lost in what was the U.S. government doing. And there are a couple points that I wanted to touch on. When we talk about the economy, yes, you can point to the ITT fiasco, if you will. But let us not forget there was a major expropriation of U.S. properties in Chile. And more importantly, there was expropriation of Chilean properties. It was a very menacing atmosphere. And I think people forget this. This was not just a democratic society at that point in time. There was a tremendous amount of turmoil and class conflict in Chile throughout this period. There was an expression used by almost all of the political parties that Allende in the end would fall of his own weight, and that's even from the Communist Party's own analysis. And I think to some degree, when we look at the economic circumstances, they really were driven by largely by the Allende policy. The cables were written inside of the U.S. government and what they should do and shouldn't do. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that that doesn't necessarily translate into real events.
How aware were you of the torture and massacres that the Pinochet regime was responsible for, the regime that the U.S. was helping to support?
I'm very glad that you've raised that question. It's important to understand, and I think for your listeners to understand, that the agency is consistent with U.S. policy and our own values. Now, they change from administration to administration in certain aspects, but the participation in the torture and killing of people just is abhorrent to the CIA as it is to everyone else. I find it personally outrageous what took place in Chile during the Pinochet administration. I'm not a defender of Pinochet, and nor are any of my colleagues that served in Chile at that time with me. It was absolutely outrageous, and CIA had no forewarning. In fact, nobody I know in any of the political parties in Chile had a forewarning, because the military was pretty much out of the political environment up until Pinochet came to power. No one really had a good handle on the mentality and culture of the military. Chile has a rich history of democracy and liberties and so on, and the Chilean military, when they came into power, I think many of us thought they would be in, settle things down, and then there'd be democratic elections and be back to business as usual. And it didn't turn out to be the case. And I remember talking to a KGB officer at the time saying that he thought Pinochet would stay in for 10 years, and I thought it was outrageous. And, of course, he was right and I was wrong. But make no mistake about it. Pinochet and the atrocity that took place, CIA had no sympathy, interest, and found it abhorrent. And frankly, to this day, I take great umbrage at the association with those incidents.
But it must have been an awful feeling to know that you were helping to support this man.
No, let's go back. I want to stick to the basic point. CIA did not organize that military coup. And
but it created that, the atmosphere that helped make the coup possible and then helped keep him in power.
That's what,
right?
That's what Peter's saying, and that's what some of the message imply they would like to see happen. It just is, there's a gap between wishes and realities here. The truth of the matter is the policy that was adhered to from the time that Allende was put into office until he was overthrown, the policy was no coup plotting. Now, what did take place? There's a lot of emphasis in the discussion earlier with Peter about negative media campaigns and so on. But it was largely, in many ways, supporting democratic institutions resisting what was viewed at the time as a Marxist onslaught. The Communist Party at that time and the leaders in Cuba and Russia, and this is well understood, viewed Chile as an opportunity to come to power through the ballot box. So there was a view of preserving. And I think the key point is the El Mercurio story, which I think is an interesting one that is raised here. What that money was used for was El Mercurio at that point in time was being pressured through print and ink and not being able to get some of the raw materials to maintain that very prestigious paper afloat in this difficult period. And the U.S. policymaker intervened to try and keep it alive. So there is a world of difference between using it as a hack media attack on Allende and trying to maintain this prestigious media outlet is in defense of the democratic elements that were there at the time.
Well, Jack Devine, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Jack Devine was a CIA agent in Chile in 1973 at the time of the coup. Coming up, more from Peter Kornbluh, author of The Pinochet File. This is Fresh Air. Could you quantify, you know, in numbers, the amount of money or the quantity of arms that we sent Chile?
You know, the Nixon administration conducted what it called an invisible blockade of aid to Chile during the Allende government. Almost all multilateral bank loans almost immediately ended to Chile after Allende's election under pressure that the United States put on the multilateral lending institutions. Credits for trade were cut off. The only trade that really significantly continued to Chile was arms to the Chilean military. As soon as Pinochet took power, despite the flow of intelligence documents and public reports of his atrocities, the spigot of economic and military aid was turned back on full steam. At one point, Chile was receiving, within months after the coup, up to 80% of the Food for Peace aid to all of Latin America. Chile became, during the first couple of years of the Pinochet regime, a leading purchaser of U.S. military equipment. I think it was the number five country at one point in 1975 in purchases of American military equipment. And thirdly, where the United States had gone to Paris and pressured all of our Western European allies to cut off renegotiations of Chile's debt to make it much harder for Allende to have any money to spend on imports and for his country. As soon as Pinochet took power, the United States worked with its allies to renegotiate all of Chile's debts and really saving Pinochet hundreds of millions of dollars in the loans that his regime would have owed at that time. So across the board, aid and trade escalated. Military support was forthcoming, and the United States gave Pinochet a rather open and active embrace during his first 3 years in power.
In the Bush administration's pursuit of the war in Iraq, we've seen disputes between the State Department, the Defense Department, and the intelligence agencies about what should be done and how it should be done. Can you describe if there were similar disputes going on during the coup in Chile, going on in the United States? You've said that the State Department raised questions about whether we should be backing a coup. Can you talk a little bit more about disagreements within the U.S.?
The U.S. foreign policy bureaucracy is large. Every agency has a different approach, a different vested interest. One of the things that the documents show is that Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger were essentially alone in 1970 in advocating for an aggressive, covert program to keep Allende from being inaugurated. Almost all of Kissinger's aides told him that this was impossible, pragmatically not really feasible. And second, his main deputy at the National Security Council wrote him a memo saying that this was a violation of the morals and values and principles of U.S. foreign policy, that Allende could not really be characterized as a mortal threat to the United States, and therefore the United States should not depart from its principles and try and roll back the democratic decisions of the Chilean people. One of the things that's most illuminating is that after Allende was inaugurated, within 48 hours, Kissinger had held meetings with the State Department about what we should do now. The State Department essentially said, look, he is democratically elected. He is the legitimate president of Chile. You know, we can support the political parties there, the opposition parties, but really we're just going to need to work with him. We really don't have any other option. Kissinger sends a set of arguments to Nixon saying, if you don't lay down the law to the bureaucracy here, there's going to be a drift towards a modus vivendi with Allende, and he will be able to consolidate his power and present himself as a successfully elected Marxist with dire implications for U.S. interests in the future around the world. And of course, Nixon took Kissinger's advice and made it clear to his aides that the United States was going to aggressively oppose Allende and hurt him the best we could. If Kissinger, can I just say, if Kissinger had recommended, perhaps, that we simply have a modus vivendi with the democratically elected president of a very small and strategically unimportant country in the southern cone of Chile, we might not today be commemorating the 30th anniversary of the brutal coup that cost Allende his life and brought Augusto Pinochet to power.
Are there CIA protests that have been revealed in the declassified documents? Protests against the U.S. policy. Anyone in the CIA saying, you know, we'll go along with it if you tell us to, but we don't think it's a good idea.
Right after Richard Nixon ordered the director of Central Intelligence, Richard Helms, to foment a coup in Chile in the fall of 1970, the order went down to the CIA station, and the CIA station chief, Henry Heckscher, wrote back saying that this was mission impossible. That Chile was tranquil, Chile was at peace with the election of Salvador Allende, and that there was no rationale, no justification, nothing that would make a coup possible. This was too large an order, he wrote back. And he sent a couple of cables making this point. And finally, CIA headquarters wrote back to him and said, basically told him to shut up. His opinion on this was not what was being asked for. What he was being asked for is him to implement the policy of the President of the United States to quickly and if necessarily violently, foment a coup in Chile. At one point in October, when Heckscher had finally found a disgruntled, retired Chilean general who was willing to violently instigate a coup, he wrote back to Washington, "Carnage could be considerable and prolonged, i.e. civil war, but you have asked us to provoke chaos in Chile. We provide you with formula for chaos, which is unlikely to be bloodless." And he added, "To dissimulate U.S. involvement will clearly be impossible." And that was really a prescient statement. It was prescient not only for the operation right then that led to the violent murder of the Chilean commander-in-chief, General René Schneider, but it was also prescient for the overall U.S. Covert involvement in Chile, which contributed to the advent of Augusto Pinochet, and which has essentially been a very dark stain on the history of U.S. foreign policy ever since.
Peter Kornbluh, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Peter Kornbluh is the author of The Pinochet File. He directs the Chile Documentation Project of the National Security Archive at George Washington University in Washington, D.C.